Good afternoon, everyone. This is a wonderful audience of poetry lovers and music lovers, and welcome to Poetry at the Library, brought to you by the Friends of the Concord Free Public Library. I'm Glenn Mitchell, and I help to coordinate the series, and we're thrilled to have such a wonderful turnout. This afternoon, we're going to have initial music by David Scholl on saxophone and Grant Smith percussion. And later on, after the reading by Betsy Scholl, Poet Laureate of Maine, we'll hear more about the connection between her and the saxophonist. We've asked poet Helena Minton to give the remarks for Betsy Scholl, and some of you may not know that Helena herself is a wonderful poet. She read here in this series just about a year ago, and has read at other times here in the series as well. And Helena grew up in Concord, and she is a marvelous poet, and we're so glad that she's back this afternoon to introduce Betsy. But first, we're going to hear some music.
Thank you. That's it.
Thank you. Helena Minton now is going to give some remarks for Betsy.
I'm going to have to break the spell. Sorry. It's so beautiful. Fantastic. Oh, hi, Ruth. Great to see everybody here. It's wonderful. I'm going to read the introduction. Bear with me. It is an honor to introduce Betsy Scholl, a brilliant poet and longtime friend, and to welcome David Scholl, painter and musician, and Grant Smith. Is that you? Thank you, Glenn, for inviting me to introduce Betsy, and thank you for organizing this wonderful poetry series here at the Concord Library that's been going on for several years. Thank you also to the Friends of the Library for making all these readings possible. Betsy Scholl, who was driven down from Portland, Maine today to read here, has published 7 books of poetry, starting with Changing Faces, which Helen Vendler rightly singled out in a New York Times book review, to the most recent, Rough Cradle. Both books were published by Alice James Books, now a well-known cooperative press Betsy helped found in the early 1970s. 7 books. Isn't it time for a new and selected? I hope that's in the works. Luckily, Pudding House Press has published a chapbook of Betsy's greatest hits, 1974 to 2004. So we will have to be content with this collection until a longer one appears. Betsy has won numerous awards, including a grant from the National Endowment for the Arts and 2 Maine Writers Fellowships. Her work has been anthologized and has appeared in a variety of journals, among them the Kenyon Review and the Massachusetts Review. She has been a visiting poet at the University of Pittsburgh and at Bucknell University, where she received her BA. She now teaches at the University of Southern Maine and in the MFA program of Vermont College. Megan Grumbling, in reviewing Rough Cradle, has said that the volume widens and transcends boundaries between all manner of elements. Shiva Sandage has written, "This poet hears music in everything." And Mark Doty speaks of Betsy Scholl's fiery momentum and narrative drive. I would add that Betsy has incredible range, so evident in Rough Cradle, whether it's the syncopation of coastal bop, the meditative blue lullaby, the starker chilling Tereska, or Doing Time, where Betsy's direct contemporary speech works so powerfully within the classic villanelle. Her energy, her generosity of spirit, and her fierceness, the way she gets hold of an idea or image and keeps at it, these are qualities to admire. She is highly productive. In addition to teaching, writing, and publishing, she is now in her 5th year as the Poet Laureate of Maine. On the State of Maine website, I saw a description of the Poet Laureate's responsibilities. Someone who not only writes poems for the state, but also spreads goodwill about poetry to everyone, young and old. I can't think of anyone who can do this better than Betsy Scholl. Please join me in welcoming Betsy. Thank you.
Goodness. There's the chair there.
I'm taking it.
Oh, you're taking it. And a chair there. Wow. I wanted to, nobody really introduced Dave Scholl and Grant Smith. Are you part of Little Bang too?
Yes.
Dave and Grant are part of a group called Little Bang Boston.
Little Bang.
Little Bang, who does a lot of world music and different kinds of things. As you heard, Dave is also part of a group called A Four Piece Suit, and he is a painter who exhibits a lot, and especially where he lives in Brick Bottom, and has many websites, so you can really check him out and his painting. And then I better start. Thank you for coming. I wish I could make you guys comfortable there. Okay. All right. So I wasn't going to read this poem, but then I thought I would because it is a Boston poem. I lived here for about 8 years, and they were really my first happy adult life was here. I had my children here, and for a while we lived in Jamaica Plain and had to go past the Fine Arts Museum on the Green Line, the Arbor Way. And I used to try to take our son to the art museum, and he hated it. I think he was scared of all those old portraits in the rotunda. So I have a poem about that. It's called Fine Arts. Riding a backpack through the museum, my son would cry up the scale from suggestion to howl. His first staccato sentence, down, out, home, now. Was it that gallery of stern grandparents he couldn't grin into sweet babblers? We'd hardly get past them to Degas or Toulouse-Lautrec without a guard ushering us out. Never made it to mummies, stiff as a game of statues gone horribly wrong, without the bum's rush to the lawn, where my boy happily waddled up to cigarette butts and crumpled wrappers, chased pigeons into flight, or tried to catch light playing through leaves. Light in long shafts or high noon's neon, isn't that what painters love? Sometimes after a snack we'd try again, rushing past ballerinas in pink, slumped on break or stretching at the bar, torch singers in fishnet, one calf exposed so you can almost hear a man's whiskey laugh, music pulsing the floor. Then out, now, down, home would rise again. And like art thieves, we duck the guards, slipping into a crowd past a tour guide's phrase, marvelous instant. We'd snatch what we could and make off, enough to see trolley tracks gleam or make a lone pigeon seem Picasso's invention. And a whole flock? My boy would crane to follow their swoop and rush till he toppled over, learning the world's worth falling for, not a bad place. On the steps, there'd be bigger boys with free passes scanning the crowd for fake parents to shuffle them in, as if art's guardians didn't trust them alone in the basement Egyptian rooms. Art's guardians intent on making sure something that's outlived almost unscathed, Aristotle, Suleiman, Einstein, would outlive these boys as well. Such an old debate. Those who long to finger mummy rags or after the day at school want to pencil Sue was here on anything in sight versus the guards with their mustn't disturb, as if they never saw how light in one mood paints us gold and in the next just wants to obliterate. What's a mother to do but tell her son if he wants home, it's his? And if some spendthrift years lead through down and out, through whiskey rush and throaty song, well, she'll tell herself that's not the end of anything. After this now, there's another marvelous instant. We're far from closing, far from whatever that means. I'm aware of looking up. I had a friend, we were being videotaped for something, and then they played it back to me, and I kept looking up, and my friend said, I thought I saw that Tweety Bird! And so in the back of my head is, am I doing that? I have to find my list. Thank you, Helena, for that introduction. I don't think of myself as fierce, so it's kind of nice to, I'm happy to be called fierce. I do have a villanelle, which is based on teaching in the prison. Kathy, since you guys do prison work, yeah. This is my attempt to get at that. I taught a poetry workshop off and on for many years there. So this is called Doing Time, and a villanelle repeats lines all the way through, so you'll hear that. They call me babe and make a kissing noise from inside their bars and inside their rage. Most of them are men, though they act like boys who've played too hard and broken all their toys. Now they're trying to break their metal cage. They yell out, babe, make that loud kissing noise, as if their catcalls mean they have a voice routines and bells can't break. It's just a phase their parents must have said when they were boys. Don't ask what they're in for. Let them enjoy their small audience, their short time on stage. Hey, babe, how about then that kissing noise? In class, they want to rhyme, their way to destroy all evidence of anguish on the page. They can't bear to remember being boys. Some study law, some use another ploy, daydreaming they'll do time but never age. Hey, babe means kiss off to that cell block noise, to broken men in here since they were boys. I have to say, if you're middle-aged and you want to feel girly again, go work in a men's prison, you know? It's not bad. Not bad. It was no insult to me. I heard when Helena said I was productive, what went through my head is, yeah, I got four grandchildren. and I've only written one poem about them. It's hard to write poems about grandchildren. But I do have one that I thought I would read. I was present at the birth of our first grandchild. I sort of saw her first of all. And I wrote this poem about it. She was born in December in Portland, so that's why there's a lot of coastal imagery in here, too. And it's called Lullaby in Blue. The child takes her first journey through the inner blue world of her mother's body, blue veins, blue eyes, frail petal lids. Beyond that unborn brackish world, so deep it will be felt forever as longing, a dream of blue notes plucked from memory's guitar. The wind blows indigo shadows under streetlights. Clouds crowd the moon and bear down on the limbs of a blue spruce. The child's head appears, midnight pond, weedy and glistening, draws back, reluctant to leave her first home. Blue catch in the mother's throat, ferocious bruise of a growl, and out slides the iridescent body, fish slippery in her father's hands, plucked from water into such thin densities of air, her arms and tiny hands stutter and flail till he places her on her mother's body, then cuts the smoky cord, releasing her into this world, its cold harbor below, where a blue call of shrink wrap covers each boat gestating on the winter shore. Child, the world comes in twos, above and below, visible and unseen. Inside your mother's croon, there's the hum of an old man tapping his foot on a porch floor, his instrument made from one string nailed to a wall, as if anything can be turned into song, always what is and what is longed for. Against the window, the electric blue of cop lights signal somebody's bad news. And a lone man walks through the street, his guitar sealed in dark plush. Child, from this world now, you will draw your breath and let out your moth flutter of blue sighs. Now your mother will listen to each one, alert enough to hear snow starting to flake from the sky, bay water beginning to freeze. Sleep now, little shadow, as your first world still flickers across your face, that other side where all was given and nothing desired. Soon enough, you'll want milk, want warm faces, hands, heartbeats, voices singing in your ear. Soon enough, the world will amaze you, and you will give back its bird warble, its dove call, singing that blue note which deepens the song, that longing for what no one can recall. Your small night cry roused from the wholeness you carry into this broken world. That child is now six, and she made up a song that goes like this. I was born inside my mother, I really do believe. I was born inside my mother, I am her, and she is me. A little scary that she could do that. So I was invited to read a poem. I'm going to shift to some new poems fairly soon because, of course, you're always more interested in your new poems. I was invited to read poems at the opening of the Maine Botanical Garden. They thought it would be a good idea for the poet laureate to do this, right? So they asked me if I had any poems about flowers, and I'm like, well, no. And I thought, oh, yes, I do. I sent them this poem, and they uninvited me. So I'll read it to you. It's addressed to a begonia, and I'm not, you know, I always thought begonias were dull little hothouse flowers, but this one just went on and on and on. It was the most luxurious thing I ever saw in my life. Begonia. Each evening I believe in the everlasting and fear by dawn blight will have crept into the garden. And each morning, there you are, watery blossoms dripping from lip. Oops, sorry, I just couldn't see. All right, start all over again. Each evening, I believe in the everlasting, and fear by dawn, blight will have crept into the garden. But each morning, there you are, watery blossoms dripping from the lip of multiple green faucets, a magician's trick of scarf after soft yellow and orange scarf rippling from a sleeve. How to name your layers of petal work, your shades of peach, apricot, lemon, goldfinch, labia, it's all right to look at? Again and again, your bright orange pods burst into a bush full of canaries, each one singing. Still, I can't forget that tyrants tend gardens. Stalin ordered executions among bright buds, which continued to unfurl. Such fragrant treachery. Or were they Earth's efforts to dissuade? Clearly, you have no ill will. So if there's a judgment and a witness is needed to testify against us, let it be you, before whom the only penance is awe. Oh, delicate teacups with so many rims, drinkings unthinkable. Oh, galaxy of fluorescent stars fluttering down on the just and the unjust long into September. I think it was so bad. I don't know. So I often feel like I have this other voice in my head. It's sort of like an alter ego, and mostly I think of it as a short, bald guy who stomps on cigars and says, yeah, right. You know, like I think, the world is lovely, everything's fine, God's in his heaven and all's right with the world. Yeah, right. Sometimes I think of it as a bunch of crows. So this is a poem about that. And there's this phrase, what is it, which is run together and italicized, so you're supposed to hear that as sort of this crow voice. Anyway, this is called Endless Argument. A sharp sound in the woods, what is it? not a thresh, but a threat crushing the scene. Raucous, like somebody who'd yanked the knot out of a barrel just for the pleasure of the spill. What is it? Fast-talking barker, throat full of static and croak. But stuck here in the muck, you gotta give it credit for flopping up and getting where it goes, making the most out of not much. Could be a crow. Even in snow, they can hold down a paper plate with one foot and peel off the congealed cheese. Not bad, given hard times ahead, a skill, a shill, a pickpocket saying, what is it? So you quick look up, and in that split, your wallet's lifted. Bitch if you want, but somebody's gonna stick around come winter. Somebody's gonna take all our sweet sad staring off into infinite vistas and resist, insist. This grit, this guts, this is it. Valentine's Day is coming up, and after many, many, many years, I finally wrote a couple of love poems. They're very, very, very hard, at least they were for me. So I'll read you one of those and then a couple of new poems. Are we okay on the time? Okay. So this poem is called Every Note. It's that moment the music stops, the second before hands lift to applaud, which we would prolong if we could, slip out without speaking, to hold that instant just before chairs scrape and conversations resume over the parking lot's gravel. Or it's the moment we first step out of the museum and the moon's newly minted, fir trees having shrugged into night's thick, shaggy coat as stars salt the sky, and everything's designed, shaped for delight or swirled in a fevered moment of swoon. As when we lie in a sweet tangle of limbs, and it seems the outer atoms of our flesh have blended, so you move an arm, love, but it's not the one you thought was yours. While I rub your back and feel inside your spine's sinuous ascent, that mystery of a seamless urge when silence just after music is filled with every note, the way light holds an entire spectrum, or just after love when our separate thoughts are still only of love. What isn't love or music or light, we ask ourselves then. So, one is always sort of more interested in one's new work. And I actually have a poem that's dedicated to Dave Scholl. I put it on your desk once, but I don't think you ever saw it. The story behind this poem is that I was teaching at Haystack, which is a craft school up the coast, and it's like I had to come up with exercises morning, noon, and night from Sunday through Friday. And by Friday, I was kind of wrung out. And David said he'd like to come up to Haystack and see what it was like. So I asked him to bring his instruments. And so that morning, he just played for an hour at least or more. And the students just wrote, and they loved it. So I tried to write something too. And this is what I came up with. It's the only prose poem I've ever written. At least it looks like a prose poem. I don't know if it really is, but that's what it looks like. It's called Wood Shedding. This close to the instrument, you can hear breath entering the brass and the clack of keys. Sound going out to the wall, which sends it back. Breath's invisible bubbles lingering briefly before they break. High notes like leaves wind snatched from a bough, like glitter on a sunlit bay. so much inside the soul, and who knew it could be this fluid? Who knew the air had streams, could split its seams, rise twig high, then drop through pitted brass to root rumble, moss in the mouth, splinter and knot of song? Eyes in the unpainted beams, each note a wound, a limb snapped off, broken bough, gone. But the scar sweet, the sap beaded up like an undertone's aftermath, its moth bump against a light bulb sizzling out, far out, gone, man. That feeling in the gut, a tune slide to the lowest keys, to the day's last light, honeyed and long, heading into sultry scotch straight up, window flare and rust light, street lamps flickering down the avenue's blue, slow ride toward midnight, black and white cloud light, star-tossed, red eye of a plane flashing over a club's closed door, grill down, but the vibe lingers on cindery streets, steaming grates, the notes slipping through wires and stark trees, along the slats of a broken shutter, in the bluest hour of night, hour of God, of train gone, smoker in a doorway, match strike of footsteps on concrete, one hunched walker, dog leashed to a thin leaf scrap of moon, its high C barely audible over the silent changes of traffic lights in this dark pocket of night, where nothing that drifts is a stranger, and everyone awake knows the score. So, three more? Do we do? do we have three more? Does that work? Three more?
Please.
Okay. So, this next one, I had a little extra time one day, which is like really rare. It was the summer, and I had finished doing the work I was going to do for the day, and I pulled out some failed poems, and I thought maybe I could fix them. And pretty quickly, it was clear I couldn't. And so I just really frustrated, just threw on my shoes and went out for a walk, and it occurred to me that I could do this. So this is a list of my failed poems. It's called Of the Many. My failed fish poem. It's cabana-clothed creatures in bold stripes and yellow bullseyes, like a retirement town's zoot-suited underground. My failed lament for the woman dumping her trash off the side of the road, finding in the rain-slick ravine my friend's body, half his face blown off. That inadequate elegy for my aunt, whose head ticked like a frightened clock, for the blank green eyeballs she swallowed at every meal, to see or stop seeing what? My failed dog poem, prison poem, mass grave, and sparrow poem. Those little prayers with no wings, no blood. Those electric blue bodies with yellow lips and fins. Those red prison stripes freely swimming in and out. That woman seeing my friend's one shocked eye staring up among eggshells and bacon rinds, like the land itself having waited all night for her black bags to hit the ground and burst into a shriek. My aunt's red bracelets, sandpaper laugh, gin-soaked pity. Draft after draft, the words pile up, pressed down, till what's beyond words gets crushed. My lost dog, the inmate asking to learn cursive, the curly stuff. Fields seeded with bones, how many sparrows? If there's a place where nothing is wasted, let them exist there. Each fallen bird, each glaring skull and chained body, somewhere found and counted and sung. So, I was also not invited to read poems at the governor's inauguration. And boy, was I didn't exactly want to read for the tea party, you know. And on the other hand, I do have this poem, and I thought maybe if I read this poem, he wouldn't even know it was against him. So I'll read it to you. I actually began this poem, I think, the year before Obama was elected. And in this poem, the speaker's trying to hold off the results. I mean, actually, in 08, I just couldn't wait, you know, I couldn't wait to hear the results. But anyway, this speaker is clearly assuming they might not be good. This is called Election Day, and it's set in Portland. Falling on the steps of City Hall, the light this late afternoon infuses the whole sky and bathes these poor little trees of heaven stuck in concrete. From all sides, flooding down, light slants across ruddy brick storefronts, streaks along cables, glitters up from the bay. And now, as I turn west toward the hospital, here's the moon, the Cheshire moon, grinning, bright as a politician's promise, only better, not favoring a few, but shining for anyone who stops to gaze at this sky, which not even the coldest facts can make less marvelous just now before the tabulations begin. And here's the hospital grinding on, full of wires and tubes, trays of food, socks that puff up and down so my friend's legs don't clot. Isn't it wonderful? Her loopy rainbow grin, her dozing off mid-sentence, waking surprised to say, "Oh, hello," as if I just arrived. And now, when I say goodbye and step out, the sky's so deep, I want to stuff the ballot box, voting for Earth all over again, happy to shiver in the glow as the first stars poke through this impossible to name, not yet midnight blue, letting it pour over me, glorious night, the brightening moon, below which we turn in endless space, all of us afloat, held by invisible strings, though we feel so solid, so full of our own weight. Lord, let me stand here, feeling nothing but this moment, spinning and not dizzy, not yet facing the election results. Let the bass from this passing car pulse through me as the tattered man leaning on the streetlight stops another just to ask the name of his dog, nothing more, just to say that name, Herbie, and knuckle his ears. Amazing. Two men, one in a fine suit, one in frayed tweed, stop and chat, shake hands, each grinning as they part. Here, under this glowing sky, the poles still open, and the moon above, new, all over again. With a little, feeling a little bit hopeful. Once. actually, when can we stand two more poems? Because when David was playing, when David was playing, the first part had that Irish sense to it in my mind, with the whistle. Well, okay, see, I know something. So, a couple of years ago, I was in Ireland in County Mayo, and I know nothing about my background. My maiden name was Neary, N-E-A-R-Y, which I often stutter on. I hope I won't in this poem, because it comes up many times. But I don't know where it came from, but we stopped at a graveyard and we found like many. In the poem says 28 Nereids. And I was like, wow, maybe this is where I come from. But I really have no idea. So I wrote this. The name of the poem is the title of the poem is the name of the town, which is Bell Mullet, which means mouth of the mullet, which I guess is a fish. I don't know if it's a river too, but so it's the town. It's in County Mayo. I'm looking for my roots here. To see where I came from, I'm looking at stones, at John's and Mary's, at 28 Nereids in a County Mayo graveyard, each with a pot of primroses, a plot with white chips of gravel. If the Irish love talk, my family's silence seemed to ask, who wants to go back to rotten potatoes and patched up boats, horse thievery and peat? Who needs long roots and old wars? Those sealed lips clearly said, better to shrug it all off, scrape sod from your boots and glad hand the world. Let mild winds drift above gravity's grip. But what wind doesn't come from elsewhere? Now that those Nereids are nearly gone, and there's no one to ask whose history is swelling my knuckles, crimping my face, I want to be part of a line tethered somewhere, if only by sea swells, by gusts I love best when they batter. So I stand among stones cut deep with my name, not knowing if the bones rusting here in this ground are related. But since my family left no word, I tell these Nereids, if they'll have me, I'd be pleased to be ghosted by them in their wellies and wool, their prayer beads and pints, their eyes creased by sea glitter, and those minor chords with bent notes piercing the soul. I'd be pleased to root myself in this town where tides rise and sink into sludge, this river mouth littered with bike frames, clumps of mussels and plastic buckets, my roots in this junk the water will nudge and cover again as it pours through the inlet swirling with foam. Is this where I come from? I kneel down to finger the gouged letters and half think, half say to this long line of Marys and Johns, these 28 Nereids. If we all come to the same end, surely it's not just malarkey and lark song spiraling up, then plummeting silently down. Surely by sun glint and gull, by that long ago swallowed sadness, by sea gut and gravel and wind wild sky, these stones that name you name me as well. And now this really is my last poem. I'm sorry. I hate people that go on too long. This is about a pear tree I became obsessed with a year or two ago and went to visit weekly. The poem is called Pears Unstolen, and you're supposed to think about the guy who stole pears, Augustine. At least that's what is in the back of my mind. Well, this is called Pears Unstolen. I was stopped on the sidewalk by pears, glowing on their tree like antique ornaments with flaking paint, a green metallic shimmer hinting at yellow, mottled with a few flecks of red. As light flickered over them, they seemed to flutter like candles in the leaves. But no, they were pears. And probably hard, I told myself, probably inedible, and holding their juices tight if they had juices at all. Besides, something was pitting them like brass, splotching, as if trying to spoil. Still, I wanted them. I wanted that September light licking each fruit, so it seemed lit from without and within, a fleshy tallow. I wanted the season's clock stopped before the next strike, stopped in this amber afternoon, my walk halfway, the shiny leaves just starting to curl, but still far from falling, and the pears half hidden among them, like birds singing so sweetly, you step closer, peer in, careful, careful, wanting to touch that song, but not squelch it. I stood there wanting to hoard time, a thief wanting to steal a song I couldn't hear, a fool believing there's something sweet that won't disappoint, that pears in the hand could be anything like pears dreamed in the mind, or one moment stopped could keep the rest from rotting. And what's so bad, a thief will ask. How is plucking a piece of fruit worse than worms tunneling in, bees sating themselves on that honeyed light, or mold blotching it? Maybe a saint has an answer to that. Something about too much sweetness spoiling, or there's another sweetness that grows within. For weeks I went back and forth, stopping at the tree, watching first one pear let go of its limb, then others begin to fall, flickering briefly like coals in the grass before they shrivel, letting their seeds slip out. That's the way it goes, mutters the thief. As scripture says they must, muses the saint. While a few last pears glow on their brittle stems, and the windstrum boughs bend toward earth. Thank you.